This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Right, then we're just going to do a little bit of Gemara tonight. Which is on Daf Tzadi in Kesuvos. Daf Tzadi on the Aleph and Beis. And what we're going to see here, what's really interesting, it's not a very long issue in terms of halakhic complexity. The idea is a little bit complicated, but not too bad. But what we're really going to see here is the capability of a parent to bequest a spiritual asset, not just a physical asset. Can you think of a case where a child can inherit a spiritual asset? What is a spiritual asset? So inheritance usually is about physical assets. It's about an estate, it's about money, it's about physical things. But is it possible for a child to inherit a spiritual asset from a parent? That's what we're going to learn in this sugya. And it starts with the first Mishnah in the ninth parak. Sorry, in the tenth parak. Which is called Misha Hoyon Osui, a man who was married to two women. So let's learn the Mishnah. There's only one piece of the Mishnah that we need, but let's learn the Mishnah. Misha Hoyon Osui Shtei Noshim. A man was married to two wives. He married one wife, and then he married another wife. Umeis Harishoina. Umeis, and he dies. There's only a limited amount of money in the estate, and their heirs from the first wife and the second wife, or the wives themselves are the heirs. Harishoina kudemes l'shnia. The Yoshia Harishoina kudemin l'Yoshia shnia. The first wife claims her rights to the ksuba before the second. And if the wives have died, then the descendants of the first wife claim before the second. Let's learn the Rashi. If after he died, they died, actually he speak ligwis before the estate paid out the ksubis. So now everybody's dead, except the children. And the ksubis were never paid. That's the first case. Second case, back to the Mishnah. Noso es harishoina, he married wife one, umeso, and she died. Noso shnio, he married wife two, umeis, and he died. So that's not such an unusual case. That can happen even today. The first case doesn't happen today because we don't marry more than one wife. But the second case could easily happen. Man gets married, she dies. So he remarries, he dies. Shnio v'yosheo kudmin l'yosheo rishoina. In this case, the second wife and her heirs come before the first wife. Why would that be? Why does it change? Why? Because she died, the first wife dies in between. What happens to make the second wife the primary claimant? The idea, the thing that you need to know here is a principle called ksubas benin dichrin, which means the ksuba of male heirs. And therein, if you look in your ksubas, you'll see it there, the idea of benin dichrin, which is that if you predecease me, he writes to her in the ksuba, if you predecease me, your sons will have a right to claim under this ksuba. And that was put in for a number of reasons, that firstly that she gets a sense that that will be the case and that he doesn't remarry, and then it lands up that the money goes to the new wife and her children, and the first wife's children aren't taken care of. And also because of the nadunya, it's not just the ksuba, but money that the father-in-law gave to the marriage. They wanted to encourage parents to give their daughters a nice dowry. And if the father starts worrying, you know what, I'll give them a nice dowry, And I know this future son-in-law of mine, not exactly the guy I would have chosen. If he divorces my daughter or she dies, then it's out of the family. Then he'll marry somebody else, and all this that I've given them will now go to the new family, and that's so he doesn't give, so he withholds. So in order to encourage the fathers to give generously to the couple, the Torah secures all of that income, anything that belongs to the first wife at the time of the marriage. So that's money she brought into the marriage and her ksuba. Those are her assets. When a couple get married in Jewish law, her assets are any money she brings in and her ksuba. That's what she has. And that's secured in a separate kind of trust. It's not really a trust, but in a way it is, which he gets the usufruct of. He can benefit from it during the lifetime of the marriage, in return for which he takes care of her and supports her. But the capital remains intact, and if the marriage dissolves through death or divorce, both go back to her. The ksuba and the money that she brought into the marriage goes back to her. So we don't need all these antenuptial contracts and prenuptial contracts and all of that, which are usually very damaging documents. Because they really are I'm not suggesting that one doesn't need to write them, but when you think of them, they're quite damaging. Because that's a young couple about to get married, talking about who gets what when they get divorced. And when there's a lot of money involved, there's a lot of disputes involved, as many of you are aware of, that those aren't easy negotiations. So you start the marriage with a whole argument about who gets what, when you just try, it's so counter to everything that's happening. How does the Torah deal with it? The Torah says you don't have to write anything. What she brings in is hers. Give her a ksuba as much as you want. That's hers, and that's a good time to decide how big the ksuba will be, because you're in love. So while you're in love, write a certain amount of the ksuba, and that's now hers. No matter what happens during the marriage, what she brings in and what you've given her, that's hers. There's no negotiation, there's no prenuptial contract, that's it. That's what it is. That's what a ksuba is. It's a very beautiful document. And ksubas bin dikhrin, we write into the ksuba, and if you should predecease me, then your children will have a claim under the ksuba when I die, is what we write in. So Rashi explains, Noso Rishono Umeso Bechayov, the first one dies while he's still alive. Noso Shnia Umesu, he then remarries and later dies. The Yorshe Harishono Boin Vetsuvin Ksuvas Benin Dichrin. And now the heirs of the first wife claim Ksuvas Benin Dichrin. Now why do they have to claim Ksuvas Benin Dichrin? They're heirs, they can just claim a normal Yorshe, can't they? So let's say the husband died, the father died with a 3 million rand estate. Let us say the first wife's ksuba was 1 million rand, and the second wife's ksuba was 500,000 rand. So now there's a question of how we do it. We could take the whole 3 million and divide it, and let's say each wife left one son, for argument's sake. So we could say each son gets half of the estate, 1.5 million each. But ksuba's been indifferent and says, no, that's not how you work. 1 million was left to the first wife, the first son gets 1 million. 500,000 was left to the second wife gets 500,000. That leaves 1.5 million, which they then share. So now the first one gets 1,750,000, isn't that so? So he gets 250,000 more than he would have got if we just split the estate. So that's ksuba's been different. Before you divide the estate proportionately among the heirs, you pay out the ksuba of the first wife to the sons. So Rashi explains, V'yosha rishoyin o'boyin v'tzoyivin ksubas b'din dichrin. So the heirs of the first one come to claim ksubas b'din dichrin, k'mo sheshaninu. As we learned, b'din dichrin b'yevin lechi minai, any male heirs that I have from you will be entitled. Or roisim lach lekirish raviyah, well, they want to divide in the inheritance. Shniya v'yosha kodmin, the second ones come first. Why, says Rashi, very important principle? Because the nature of the claim is different. What are the second ones claiming as? Shehi ba'alas chayv. The moment he dies, what does she become in respect to her ksuba? So the first wife is dead, so she's out of the picture. Theoretically, her heirs would get nothing other than their piece of the whole estate, of the Yerusha. The Rabbonim, the rabbis introduced the law of ksuvas b'din dichrin. They said no, they will get what their mother was supposed to get before we divide the estate. So that's Ksubas Benim Dichrin. Who are they getting that for? So who are they really inheriting from at that stage? They're really inheriting from their mother. It's a delayed inheritance from their mother. Because when he dies, if he would have predeceased her, the mother would have got it. So it's almost as if the mother gets it in her grave and gives it to her children. That's the way it kind of works. So they're inheriting from the mother. What about the second wife? What is the nature of her claim? Is she claiming an inheritance? No, says Rashi, she's not claiming an inheritance. She balas chayiv, she's a creditor. That's completely different. An inheritor, an heir is somebody who gets what's left after the creditors have been taken care of. Heirs don't get before creditors. So she's a creditor, they are heirs. So the second wife comes first because she's a creditor. Avarishoni boin leirish is avir. But the second ones come to inherit their father or possibly their mother. Because it says you'll get it as an inheritance. So you now pay the debt and the balance is an inheritance. So that's the first case. The case is going to get one step more complicated. So let's make sure we understand the first dimension clearly. One wife, one. He marries one wife one dies. He marries wife two, he dies. If it weren't for Ksuvas Blin Dichrin, if it weren't for the decree of the rabbis of Ksuvas Blin Dichrin, the first sons would have no claim other than heirs. That's all. But because of Ksuvas Blin Dichrin, they can claim the Ksuba that their mother would have got had she been alive when her husband died. The sons cannot claim. But they can't claim it before the second wife has been paid out or her heirs, if she subsequently died. Because she and her heirs claim in the role of creditors, and they're claiming in the role of heirs, and creditors come before heirs. It's very simple. It's logical. Now the Gemara says on the next page, the second line of the next place, Shema Mino Tlas, we learn from this three things. I'm only going to do one of the three things that we learn from it. The first one is, we won't do the first one, we're going to do the second one. So a few lines further down, it says, Ushemamino, at the beginning of the line, which is about seven lines on the top of the page. Ushemamino, and the second thing you learn from this is, Ksuvo nases moito lechaverta. A ksuba can be considered moisar, a redundancy, for its counterpart, for its other ksuba. So this is the second level of complexity. What do we have here? We have another din, that ksubas benim dichrin is a law of the rabbis. And the rabbis can't introduce a law that completely nullifies a law of the Torah. So what happens if, once again, the man dies, leaving a $3 million estate. And the ksuba of the first wife is $1 million, and the ksuba of the second wife is $2 million. So there's exactly the amount needed to pay out the ksubas. So we give $2 million to the heirs of the second wife, and $1 million to the heirs of the first wife. Says the Gemara, that's a problem. Because we haven't fulfilled the law of Yerusha. The law of Yerusha is all sons inherit equally. And here we've paid out ksubas. Now we have to pay out the second ksuba because she's a creditor. But why do the first sons get the million? That million should be shared between the two sons. Okay, again, the estate has $3 million. The ksuba of the first wife was $1 million. The ksuba of the second wife was $2 million. See, I like to talk in million. The ksuba of the second wife is $2 million. There's enough to pay both ksubas. The second wife claims as creditor. Right? You owe me, you wrote in the ksuba, if you die, I'm a beneficiary, not as an heir. It's been bonded, it's been mortgaged during your lifetime. I've had a lien on this property all of our lives. Now you've died, the condition of the loan kicks in. It's basically a loan payable on death or divorce. So it kicks in, so I want my $2 million. Now we've got another million. We could treat the million as ksubas benim dichrin, belonging to the heir of the first wife, or we could treat the million as estate and say the two sons share it. That's the question. Now, if we treat it as ksubas bin dichrin, and we say, oh, that's very fortunate. So the second heirs get the full ksuba, no problem. Here's your 2 million. What do we do with the 1 million? We give it to the first heirs. Now come the second heirs, they say, we want half of that too. Because the first heirs aren't entitled. We say, no, ksubas bin dichrin, they're entitled to what their mother would have got. The second heirs might win. Because there's been no Yerusha. The second heirs say, we haven't inherited. And there has been no Yerusha. The Torah says that you've got to give your sons equal portions. The rabbi said, the sons of the first one can get. By that law, they've undone the law of inheritance. Our father has not been mekayim the mitzvah of leaving something behind. The rabbis can't undo the law of the Torah. So in theory, if there's nothing left, if paying out the benin dichrin would leave nothing for inheritance, then the benin dichrin don't get, the male sons of the first life don't get. Then they function as ordinary heirs, and they participate in the splitting up of the estate. But, says the Gemara, here we seem to see something interesting. The question is, do you regard the ksuba of the second wife as inheritance or not? Because if you would regard the ksuba of the second wife as inheritance, it doesn't get much more over the complicated part. Now you can relax. This is about as complicated as it gets. If we treat the second ksuba as not as creditor, but as estate, then there has been Yerusha. If we're treating it as estate, maybe there hasn't been Yerusha. If we're treating it as creditor, then maybe there hasn't been Yerusha. We've paid her out. Now there's 1 million left. We give the 1 million to the Ksuvah Spilin Dichrin to fulfill the law of the rabbis, but we're not fulfilling the law of the Torah. The law of the Torah says split that 1 million 50-50. The son of the first wife and the son of the second wife each get half of that. That's what the Torah says. The rabbis come along and says, no, give it all to the first son. But the rabbis can't do that. They can't undo the law of the Torah. So the Gemara says there's a major innovation we learn from this Mishnah. And that is that the second ksuba, let's read it again, Shmaimina, ksuba, that second ksuba, nases moyotel lechaverto, that second ksuba is the redundant piece. It is Yerusha, that second one. Although it's Baal Chov. Now this is very weird. We've just said it's a debt. We've just said it's been mortgaged all their life. So the moment he dies, it belongs to her. That's not Yerusha. She's not claiming it as Yerusha. Or her heir isn't claiming it as Yerusha. The moment he died, it's transferred into her account. It's owed to her. How can the Gemara say this is a debt? What, this is Yerusha. Where's the inheritance? Do you follow the difficulty? The Gemara says we see that it's an inheritance. How do we see it? The Gemara says because it doesn't say anywhere that there has to be something left over. The Mishnah just says, marries the first wife, first wife dies. Marries the second wife dies. What do? The children of the second wives come first, and then the balance, when you've paid them, what do you do with the balance? You pay the first ones. That's ksuvas bin dichrin, we said. How can you pay? Why doesn't the Mishnah say, on condition there's at least something left over, $10 left over to split between the two sons so that you can fulfill the mitzvah of Yerusha? But if there's nothing left over, there's no Yerusha. So we'll learn a Rashi, which is quite fascinating. Rashi answers this dilemma. How can it be that second ksuba, do you follow the difficulty? The second ksuba was mortgaged. It belongs to the wife. He dies. She's still alive at that point. The moment he dies, it belongs to her. That doesn't go into the estate. What's left in the estate? The 1 million. The Torah says split the 1 million. The rabbis say give it to the children of the first one. That's a problem. Now says the Gemara, we learn from this Mishnah that second 2 million that you give to the heir of the second wife, that is Yerusha even though it belongs to the second wife. How can that be? Explains Rashi. Ksuba now says, Moitza lechaverta. About 7 lines on the top of the Rashi. The afal gav, de loy tikun ksubas brin dichrin, elo imkein yesh moisar ashtei ksubas, dina. Even though it is true, asks Rashi, after all, the law of Ksubas Benin Dichrin, the law that the first sons can get from the Ksuba, applies only if there's something left over after paying both Ksubas. So you pay the second ksuba because it belongs to the second wife. You pay the first ksuba because of the law of ksubas b'din dichrin, and there are a few dollars left over to split between the two of them so that we can be mekayim the mitzvah of Yerusha. Deloimi akro nachlo d'oraisa, because we're not allowed to uproot the law of nachlo in the Torah, the law of inheritance in the Torah. Kidnan befirkin, lefashin, and time befirkin, narash, and spadot, as we learn in the Peri. But, says Rashi, hani mili ki mesu shtehen bechayav. That's only if they both predeceased him, both wives. The tarvayu atu b'teras b'din dichrin. Then he dies. So think it through. Wife one dies. She's had a ksuba for $1 million, but he doesn't have to pay out because she died. Wife two has a ksuba for $2 million. She dies. So from a financial perspective, he's lucky he hasn't had a payout. So he's still got his $3 million. Then he dies. Now, there are two possibilities. Either we say no ksubas, midoraisa, there's no payments on ksuba because there wasn't a divorce and there wasn't the death of a husband. So there's no ksuba. There's $3 million left in the estate. We said, there's one child from each wife, one son from each wife. Each one gets $1.5 million, end of the story. That's what we might have thought. Ksubas b'dichrin says no. Give them what their mother would have got. Give the first son $1 million, the second son $2 million, that's the law of the rabbis. But then we're undoing Yerusha. Well, as long as there's another $10 left. So in a case like that, what the second son should do is donate $10 to the estate to make sure that there's some kind of Yerusha. Take $10, give $5 to each, now you've done Yerusha. The remaining $3 million, give $1 million to the first Brin Dichrin, $2 million to the second Brin Dichrin. That's how we would do it. That's if it's in his lifetime. Aval achas b'chayev v'achas b'moisa, but the case in our Mishnah is one in his lifetime and one after his death. Shashmiya nigbeis b'teras choyv. The second one is claiming as a creditor, not as an heir. Says Rashi, ein lecho Yerusha gedolo mizu. This is the greatest inheritance possible. What does he mean? The second wife is claiming as a creditor. That means the money was hers all the time. And Rashi says there's no greater inheritance. V'lo mi'akro nachlo d'oraisa, you're not undoing a nachlo in the Torah. Shekesh shemeis, because the moment he died, noflu nechosim lifnei yorshim, the estate fell into the care of the heirs. U'cheshiyotso shtar choyv al avihem, and when the first heir produces a document, which is the ksuba, to the estate, so the heir of the second wife now wears two hats. I am heir, and I'm creditor on behalf of my mother, my late mother. As creditor, I am owed $2 million. Who has to pay the $2 million? The estate. Who owns the estate? The two boys. So now wearing the other hat, he says, me and my partner, my brother, my half-brother, needs to pay me, my mother's son, the ksubas b'din dichrin. Not the ksubas b'din dichrin, the real ksuba, because the second wife died after the husband. Eilu ve'eilu oisim mitzvah lifroya chayvas avien. Do you remember the last year? What did we learn on the last Wednesday night? What did we learn? We learned that it's a mitzvah to pay a debt. That's what we learned. And we had a lot of discussion about what that mitzvah is, where that mitzvah appears in the Torah, what kind of mitzvah. We looked at the Rambam and the Mordechai and the Chuvas HaRadvaz and so on. We had a lot of fun. But there was a principle that paying a debt is not only a financial obligation, it's also a mitzvah. Says Rashi, so who is paying the debt? There's a debt now. The estate has a debt. $2 million. Whose debt is it? It's the father's debt. The father owed the $2 million to his second wife. Who pays on behalf of the father? The two boys. Why are they paying on behalf of the father? Why are they paying their father's debts? Because they inherited it. They inherited the debt. How can you inherit debt? Says Rashi, because that's a mitzvah. You're inheriting an asset. We look at debt as a liability. But if priyas chayv is a mitzvah, then debt is an asset. It's a spiritual asset and an economic liability. That's what it is. And when we look at economics, we only look at the physical balance sheet. So if you look at the physical balance sheet, you say, oh my goodness, this person has $1 million of assets and $2 million of debt, he's bankrupt. From a spiritual perspective, you look at it and you say, this person has $1 million of assets and $1 million of debt, you say he's bankrupt, there's nothing left. From a spiritual point of view, you say, oh wow, this person has an opportunity for a huge mitzvah, there's a massive asset sitting on this balance sheet. There's $1 million of financial asset, there's $1 million of financial debt, so financially it zeroes out, and spiritually, there's a huge mitzvah of priyas bal chayiv, to pay a creditor. What an opportunity. It's a mitzvah. What happens to that mitzvah? The heirs inherit it. So there's a huge chiddush in this Gemara, that the din that there must be something left over to fulfill the requirement of inheritance, so that you can then implement ksuvas b'din difrin of the rabbis, that law that there must be something left over, even if what's left over is a mitzvah of priyas bal chayiv, what's left over to inherit is not assets to be gained physically, but an asset to be gained spiritually, because when you repay a debt, you gain a mitzvah. It works a little bit like that in accounting too. What happens in the books when you pay a debt? Don't you credit the account somewhere? You do, you get a credit when you pay a debt, don't you? So spiritually you get a very big credit when you pay a debt. And that's how we need to look at our debts. If we would start looking at our debts that way, then it would be very, very different. There are a number of people who write about this. It's quite interesting about the change in your whole attitude when you're doing your bills at the end of the month. Is when you open a bill, if you open it with the same attitude that you would open it if it was a gift. So if you open it and there's a check, and he says, here's $150 for you. Ah, fantastic, got $150. Here's a bill for $150. You say, another bill, right, and it's miserable, and you procrastinate, and you're trying to put it off, and if you haven't got enough money, you worry about how you're going to manage this. Do I have to pay it this month? Maybe I can pay it. It becomes very negative energy. It's a very draining experience. And we have to pay debts. We have to do it all the time. That's how we live. That's how we function. Buy things, we have to pay. If we would pay cash, it would be emotionally not so draining. Because you give the guy the money, you take the objects, and it's a fair exchange. You feel okay. The terrible thing is when you buy on credit. Because you get the thing first, and you have the fun, and then you just get a bill. And you get nothing for the bill. You've just got to give money out. And that's very draining. Paying money out is very draining. Now, it's not so draining when you give tzedakah. Have you noticed that? Giving tzedakah is not like paying bills. There's some kind of pleasure in giving tzedakah. You get something from it. We've got to remember that priyas bal chayiv is a mitzvah too. It's a chesed of the Ribbono Shel Olam that he made bill paying a mitzvah. So we can get spiritual energy from paying our bills too. We can look at a bill and say, here's another mitzvah. And it only costs $150, that's all. Look at the Mitzvah you're showing me. That's what we're here for. It's to accumulate only $150. And I can pay, and I got something for it. It's not even stocker. I actually got something for it physically, and by paying for what I got, I'm doing another mitzvah. It's unbelievable that Hashem would give us that mitzvah. And that mitzvah is like a physical asset that you can inherit to children. It's such a real asset that it counts as an inheritance when you're working out from a technical halachic perspective, that there needs to be a divisible asset in the estate that might even be a choyv, it might even be a need to pay a debt, because that too is an asset in the estate. Look what a beautiful idea comes out of a very technical piece of Gemara. A piece of Gemara that deals with ksubas and how to divide them, and ksubas being different. Just a very technical piece of Gemara. And yet look what comes out of it, an understanding of how far we go in the idea of priyas bal chayiv mitzvah. It's not just a kind of some idea in the Gemara somewhere. It's something that we can use every day of our lives. Every time you pay a bill, hineni mekayim betashlum zeh mitzvas boiri, I'm about to fulfill a mitzvah of the Ribbono Shel Olam to pay my debts. There can almost be a brocha on it. We light Chanukah licht, we get all excited. And we sing Maaz Tzur, and we have latkes, and we sing and we dance, and we give each other gifts. It's a mitzvah. Come Sukkot, we get all excited. We build our sukkahs, and we decorate our sukkahs. It's a mitzvah. Chanukah is only a drabonin. Paying a debt is a doraisa. It's a much bigger mitzvah. Paying your bills is a bigger mitzvah than lighting Hanukkah licht. You can enjoy it just as much. It doesn't have to be miserable. You can celebrate paying a bill also. It's as celebratory. It's the fulfillment of a mitzvah. Quite apart from all the other reasons to do that. That's the halacha. Isn't it amazing what a Torah we've got? Isn't it amazing what it is, what Gemara is, what halacha is, what we mean by spirituality and where we find our spiritual energy in the day-to-day things that we do that would otherwise be draining. Hashem turns it into something that is uplifting and fulfilling so as to help us in our journey that the Mr. Shoshone described, to come closer to Hashem and to enjoy His presence.